Good to have you aboard here on the John Gambling Show. And Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Good morning.
You know, I was in Chicago yesterday.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
A little bit chilly, but the day before, it was 70 in Chicago.
Well, you missed a beauty yesterday here.
When I got off the plane here yesterday, it was noticeably warmer than we got
what
on.
What were you doing in Chicago?
A big conference, which Rahm Emanuel put together on the environment of a whole bunch of cities that are working together, and then we stood before a coal-fired power plant that has just agreed to close, maybe convert to natural gas, but stop using coal. Coal-fired power plants are responsible for something like 30% of the greenhouse gases. If you could get rid of coal in this country, you'd make a big difference. And it's, you know, people say, oh, global warming 50 years from now, I don't believe it. The truth of the matter is, either whether you believe that or not, right now you can look and see the asthma rates of kids that live around coal or downwind from coal-fired plants. And you can do the same thing in New York City. We've plotted where kids who show up in the hospital with asthma attacks live. And they live right in a band, right along the major roads, that, like, for example, across the GW Bridge.
The stuff coming out of trucks mostly, and cars.
Trucks and cars that are stuck in traffic right all the time. The other roads aren't as bad. Also, you can look and you can plot where kids have asthma attacks versus buildings. In the older buildings that use this heavy number 6 oil pollute a lot. And while it does get dispersed, the closer you live, the more dense it is and the more damage it does to kids, and you and me as well, but mainly kids. And in the winter, when we heat these buildings with number 6 oil, it's a lot worse than in the summer, because cooling, they tend to use electricity or other kinds of forms of energy.
Okay, I know that you are a major league renewable energy guy, which is perfectly fine. It makes sense intellectually. But the economics of it is very difficult.
Economics of wind power is getting much better, much faster than solar. And there is a lot of evidence that wind power really will, in the next 5 years or so, become a very important part of the energy throughout this country. You don't see it as much here, but you go elsewhere, as you're starting to see a lot of windmills. And it's solar that still costs more. Having said that, my company put in 9 acres of solar panels around our buildings in Princeton, New Jersey. And the payback is 2.7 years. You save enough of 2.7 years
nine
to pay
acres,
for it.
9 acres is a lot of land.
Well, it was farmland that nobody was using. Sitting there.
Well,
I had nothing to do with it. I found out about it after they did it, and I thought, you know, what a great idea.
They don't tell you anything, huh?
You know. No, they don't. But I was thrilled to see you. And you really do save a lot of money.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I happen to know, because my wife is from the area, but down in southern New Jersey, which is still very much farm country, and the economics of farming in the Garden State are still legit, but they're getting softer and softer. The power companies down there have bought a lot of the land and are doing exactly the same thing, putting photovoltaics, acres and acres of photovoltaics.
Yeah.
It's still expensive.
Nothing is perfect. Nothing is cost-free, but coal is the worst. Natural gas is a lot better, but not as good as wind and solar. Wind and solar are not without their problems. Some people say that the wind turbines kill birds. There's not a lot of evidence of a lot, but you know, listen, you build a building, birds fly into the building and
birds
die.
Fly into my window of my house.
Right. So, you know, I mean, it's not. And solar, the stuff that it takes to make the panels isn't, the process uses energy and may not be the cleanest. So there's no free lunch
here.
Nuke has never killed anybody. I don't know. If
I'm a huge
in the world.
Supporter of nuke.
Nothing's perfect once again, but yes, I do too. I am too. Coal-fired plants. If you have to choose between coal and nuke, coal kills. The estimates are something like 13,000 people a year in America from the stuff that they put in the air. And as a matter of fact, both sides of Congress just voted through this mercury bill. Mercury is a disaster, and it gets into the water, into the fish, and then you eat it, and it's terrible.
Where does the mercury come from,
from coal-fired plants.
Okay.
And so they passed this bill, and, you know, you say all of the brouhaha about I don't believe in global warming, and the Republicans and Democrats never get together. The fact of the matter is they did, and they passed this bill, and that helps in getting rid of coal-fired plants, because the new standards are very hard to meet if you burn coal.
You obviously know a lot about this. Is there no technology?
No.
We have unlimited amounts of coal in this country.
Well, we have unlimited amounts of natural gas too, incidentally, and that's, you see what's happening. The price of natural gas is plummeting because it's been so warm. but it tells you how much natural gas is being used instead of coal and the old heavy oil. This country is now exporting oil. We know, we all talk about energy independence. We are, in the sense that if, for example, Saudi Arabia would stop producing, which would be much worse for the Europe than if Iran stopped producing, but that would hurt the Europeans' supply of oil. Their economy suffers. We sell to Europe, so it would hurt our economy as well. But it's not the direct thing. We don't get any oil from Saudi Arabia.
We ship refined product.
I don't know if we just whether
that's
we ship just refined.
My guys,
is that
me,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, that could very well be.
Right.
But we're a net exporter, and we have lots of coal. We have an enormous amount of natural gas. You get it out by this fracking process. We've been fracking for 50 years. The issue here is to make sure that you do it in a responsible ways. And there's no reason to say no, because we need the natural gas, and the only ways you get it out, I gather, is with this process, which is what they drill a hole and then they use high pressure water to crack the rock, and the gas is in the rock, and then the gas comes out, and without that you wouldn't get very much gas out of it. But wind is the one that does seem to be getting better. The cost of a turbine is very low, keeps coming down, a lot of competition. China makes a lot of them, but there are other places that do as well. Once you get it, they tend to be low maintenance. And if you put them in places where the wind is consistent, then it really is a good deal. One of the problems with wind, and with solar as well, is you only get it for part of the day. In the case of solar, you only get it during the daylight hours. In the case of wind, you only get it when the wind blows. So you say, well how do you store it? Because you need energy all the time. The answer is you really don't. You use it when it's generated and stop using other fuels. Stop using natural gas or oil or coal. Oil really doesn't figure much in this. It's coal or
natural gas. Germany has invested in wind, I mean, a significant amount of wind technology and actual hardware. And they only produce, they only get about 3% of their energy from this huge investment.
I don't know if that huge is huge in the context of 3% of their energy. If it isn't profitable, they aren't going to do it. You know, governments can get involved a little bit at the fringes, but it's so big, even governments can't dictate this. If you go to the Netherlands and places like that further north, a very big percentage of their energy comes from wind. You see these big wind farms. I went to visit one, if you remember. We were a couple of years ago, did a C40
upstate
conference.
Yeah.
No, this was over in
Europe.
Yeah, North Sea area.
Oh, I remember, yeah.
Yeah, and you go out in this boat, and you know, you've seen one turbine, you've seen them all, but it was interesting. And there's more and more of that, so that's what you're going to see, I think.
I'm a big supporter of the goal. I know this is a huge goal. You talk about investment, but of turning the trucking industry into a natural gas-powered industry.
It will happen as the technology gets better. You asked, is there any ways to clean up the coal? Or I thought you were about
yeah,
to, and then
exactly
we sort of
right.
got this in another direction. So far, no. Now, if you did, then coal could be used, but there's no... They do what they call sequestering. You take out the bad stuff and you stick it in the ground.
Yeah, but nobody's really done that yet on a scale.
Not in any scale. That's correct.
Right.
It's still in the science rather than the engineering stage. And maybe it works someday. Maybe it does not. But there are other people trying to harness the tides. There are plans.
They still have the turbines over at Roosevelt Island
in
the water?
You know, I think
they ripped themselves apart or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough environment to gather. You'd think you could build one. I don't know enough about it. But
if you could, as you said earlier, if you could, you would have.
Absolutely. But there's a lot of, there's some research on, you put a big solar collector up in a satellite, and then you beam down the energy. Well, you know, if the economics...
Remember when you were a kid and you had the magnifying glass and the leaf?
You know, you say this is ridiculous, cost a lot to do it, but once you get a satellite up there, the cost of the energy is zero. It comes from the sun. So, you know, there's all these things that are bubbling up and going on. In the meantime, we have to have a consistent energy source, and I think it's fair to say that in a lot of parts of the world, nuclear will be part of that. People say, oh, I don't want... I'm scared of terrorists or of a runaway explosion. That's not what happens. You have a tsunami which took out their electric supplies so they couldn't cool the reactors. That's terrible, and it did enormous damage. doesn't look like it really hurt anybody. People did not get exposed. Well,
unfortunately, with that stuff, only time tells.
Well, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the radiation that killed enormous numbers of people, but the radiation afterwards was not what everybody thought that it would be in terms of killing people. It was a very sad period. You know, a lot of enormous number of people killed.
No, I think, too, again, as everybody says, we don't have to spend any more time on this, but as everybody says, is the grid, the national grid, the actual transmission lines are probably our biggest and weakest point.
You lose a lot of the energy as you transmit it long distances. And in fact, that's why you transmit direct current rather than alternate current, because it's much more efficient. But even then, you lose it. So you'd love to generate the energy near where it's used. The trouble is, near where it's used is in populated areas. Nobody wants plants. Nobody wants...
You can't even put transmission lines under places.
Well, in the end, there's a lot of yelling and screaming. And in the end, they get done because the alternative is you turn your light switch and nothing happens.
Which
and nobody's going to tolerate that.
Your radio wouldn't work. It'd be a horrible thing.
Well, horrible. You couldn't live without listening to the John Gambling Show on Friday mornings from 8 to 9.
I literally couldn't live.
That is awesome.
18 minutes after 8 o'clock, back with Michael Bloomberg in a moment. We'll take the NYPD surveillance in Newark continues to move the meter. In fact, it's still pretty loud coming from various places. The FBI director, you've got the FBI in New Jersey, you've got the attorney general involved. And
you know, it's a made-for-television thing. It gets you publicity. If you want to talk, there's somebody willing to stick a microphone or a camera in front of you and put it on the air. I don't know how much of it's that. I thought Mueller, the FBI director, Robert Mueller, said, look, he said the NYPD has done a remarkable job protecting New York City. And so one of his guys in Newark said something different. You know, okay, there's always these, every agency of at every level of government would like to be involved. And so, you know, if you have a big case, everybody rushes to get on board.
Oh, do you think that's what the issue is in New Jersey?
No,
maybe?
But I think there is always that tension. But to say that the NYPD and the FBI and the CIA don't work together is ridiculous. They work as seamlessly together. You are well served. I can just tell you that. Do they each have their own pride? Sure. It's like police and fire in New York City. You've got two groups that have this enormous pride, a can-do attitude. They want to be the front guy. They want to be the first one. And that's a healthy tension. You want to make sure it doesn't get out of hand. You want to make sure that in the end they work together, and they do. In fact, every time I go to visit one family with a cop or a firefighter, there's another member of the family from the other side, if you will, so they don't. But then there was a great op-ed in today's Wall Street Journal in the A section, the opinion section, which I would just urge you to read. The title is New York's Finest Are Getting Smeared, and it's written by this guy, Richard Clark. Here's his book. He, Judith Miller, and R.P. Eddy wrote a story, and he talks about it. He's the New York's Finest Are Getting Smeared, and he talks about it. I just read you. He said, identifying such hotspots, which is legal, appropriate, and no cigarette, which is right, incidentally. He said he had Cody on.
Yeah,
Governor
Cody
of New Jersey
this week.
He had signed agreements with New York Police Department.
Right.
Because it's a regional thing, and they want our help. We have the size police department that no local town outside of New York City would possibly have.
And training
have.
That is unique.
Yeah, so of course they would want us to do that. And, you know, the fact that sometimes, in all fairness to Governor Christie and Mayor Booker, sometimes the communications within my agents, my administration or their administration is never as perfect as you'd like it to be. And, you know, every time, there's lots of times I said, we did what? We knew what? You can't know everything. If you run a government where everything has to get to the top guy, you can't run it. It just, things are too big to do that. But what Clark and Miller and Edie said was, hear this, identifying such hotspots, legal appropriate, no cigarette, NYPD officials testified, handshoe guidelines authorized to police to, quote, visit any place and attend any event that is open to the public, conduct online search activities. Criminals often share ethnic backgrounds. For police to look for certain criminals among certain ethnic groups is only logical and doesn't suggest a belief that all or even a significant minority of that group are criminals. And I can just tell you this, the Muslim groups that I have talked to in the last few weeks, to say all, I think is very close to being accurate. They keep saying, look, we don't want to be out there, you know, getting involved in this. We should just keep our heads down. But we do not need another terrorist attack. If you want to have people stirred up against any group, have a problem where they're involved. They have as big a vested interest in staying safe. They're Americans. They're citizens. They have kids. They have the same aspirations that you and I do. They contribute to our society, and they want to be safe, and that's what we're doing here. And when one group happens to have some clergy that try to rile things up, and we've had it, if you go back to the Jewish Defense League, I mean, there have been lots of times that plenty of other ethnic groups, and that's and when that happens, you focus on that. But I still come back to the NYPD is doing what's legal and appropriate, and everybody knows, all of the other agencies know, they do work together, you can rest assured no matter what you hear. And, you know, when you get a guy like this guy, Richard Clark, he worked for 30 years at the Pentagon, the State Department, he was White House advisor to Clinton and a strong supporter of John Kerry. This is not a right-wing guy. This is I think it's fair to say, a pretty liberal guy. And he is very well respected, not always liked because he calls him the way he sees him. But I thought he and Judith Miller, who is, you know, I've known Judy for a long time. She's very strong and believes.
I know Arpietti.
I do not.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, good guy. Yeah, and well, that's what Stu said to me. We're doing the right thing. We will continue to do the right thing. We do take every precaution possible to not do anything that ever violates the law. You just got to be very careful not to take away the rights that we're trying to protect. On the other hand, the converse is also true. You've got to do everything to protect the rights that we have. And if we were to have another terrorist attack, you saw after 9/11 how we pulled back in terms of protecting people. And this country passed some laws, which are still on the books, that expanded the police powers. We don't need more of that. Let's use the laws we have. Let's, and as I said again yesterday, the standard that we have is a daunting standard. This administration, this police department, the best police department in the world with Ray and everybody else in it, they have to be perfect every single day. The terrorists have to be right only once. And I can't guarantee that we're not going to have a problem. I can guarantee you that this administration will do everything it can legally to protect America, protect New York City and the New York region, because it's not just the city.
And I am assuming that the region includes Connecticut as well, and if necessary, Pennsylvania.
And Nassau and something. To say that all of the law enforcement agencies don't talk is ridiculous. You're chasing a guy in a hit and run, and he gets to the border of a county or a state. You know, you make sure that the other guy, that somebody picks up the chase on the other side or whatever the protocol is, but you work on this and you plan for this. And incidentally, the number of, because of the size of the NYPD and because of the quality of the training, the police officers in a lot of these other jurisdictions are former NYPD guys. That's where they got their training. That is why these other counties and states want to hire them, because they are so well trained. Is every cop perfect? No, of course not. But, you know, Ed Koch said you got the NYPD is the size of the average city in the country, or bigger. And he said, you know, you'd have a city without one bad rotten apple. Okay, thank you very much. Let's get on with it.
Does this sort of situation, I know it is what it is, and you deal with it the way you have to, but does it frustrate you?
No, it's part of the job.
It's part of the
In the end, we all say a diversity of opinion is great. And then deep down inside, when that diversity of opinion isn't your opinion,
it gets a little more less fun.
It's less fun, but it is still true that the diversity of opinion is great, and you have to defend it. And now I think, you know, whether you go back to things that are controversial, the mosque, people should have a right to build their place of worship and pray the way they want to pray. You don't have a right to hurt people. And so there are restrictions on what your religious practices can be. There are places where it's just not appropriate. There are places where we can't provide protection. And, you know, we would give advice to say, you know, don't do it there. It's down the street. If you ever need it with a dead end, if you needed the gas, a fire truck there, we couldn't get there. It's that kind of stuff. But no, It's why this is the greatest city in the world. We have a balance. And in fact, if you look at the newspapers, you know, you have newspapers all over the spectrum here. I think we basically have it right, and we should be proud of what we have. And my obligation is to protect people, and it's also to stand up the other side. There are plenty of times the people that say, oh, we're behind you on this policy that we've been talking about, but we're opposed to you on building the mosque. Okay, it's my way of thinking. I'm supposed to do both.
That's what the human condition is about, right? Different or individual points of view. Mr. Mayor, sit tight. Let me take a fast break here. It's 8:23 now before 9 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show. Story this morning, FDNY test and Judge Garofalo's still causing the city, giving them a headache.
Well, we think that the amount of money we'll eventually have to pay is a lot less than what the maximum his order would be. But the bottom line is we don't agree with his decision at all, and it's only the first step in the process. You can rest assured we will appeal. I watched Nick Scapetta for 8 years as a fire commissioner work as hard as anybody possibly could to make more people take the test, and then Sal Cassano has continued that. There are more people that have taken the test that want to join the fire department, more diverse. We have to have a test that tests the skills that are required to be a firefighter and not look at anything else. The more diversity in the applicant pool, the more diversity you'll have and who gets on the job. But you want there's a minimum amount of physical strength you need, and then the rest, I think it should be just a plain IQ test. You know, in this day and age, you don't know what's behind that door. And if I'm there and a firefighter's coming in to save my life, I want to have the smartest person we can find. And all his study for any particular problem in the past may not be for the future. You just want the smartest person, man or woman.
I don't think anybody's going to argue that.
But oh, yes, the judge does.
Well, that's what I'm saying. With the template that the judge has put together, that IQ test would be unfair.
That's correct. Because, you know, I mean, I'm not here to defend the judge because I certainly disagree with him totally. I think the question is equal opportunity versus equal results. Is one of the things, and I think the test that we've had in the past, equal opportunity, he would argue that they weren't germane. I happen to think that's wrong. The test you take is not, you got to learn to put number two foam on a number three oil fire. And they say, oh, you know, the kids of firefighters have it an advantage, and they keep going. The reason the kids of firefighters tend to go into the fire department is they watch their fathers, and in some cases mothers, a lot fewer, but more, and they say, that's a great job. Now, we've tried to spread the message that it's a great job. It's a job we have you take enormous risks with your own life to protect others, but there's enormous pride and an esprit de corps, and you talk to firefighters, they love the job. They think they're really making a difference and take enormous pride, as do our police officers, and incidentally, as do our sanitation office. I mean, there's lots of parts of the city where people take great, some aren't as risky as the fire and police, but where they take great pride. And it's just a question, the judge says, oh, no, the test is biased. I don't know that the test is biased, but, you know, we use general IQ tests or variations of in a lot of things. And if you don't pass the test, you don't get the job. It's getting into college. I mean, with SATs. Somebody says, oh, SATs are unfair. You know, you got to have some standard. And in the case of firefighters, to me, it's got to be, it should be a physical, how much is needed to carry somebody out, and all your bunker equipment and everything. And in the case of the written test, to me, I think an IQ test. And everybody says, well, the IQ test is slanted in one way or another based on your life experiences. There's nothing that is not going to be, to some extent, based on your life experiences. And there's always going to be somebody who didn't have those life experiences, and maybe they are at a disadvantage, but society still has to find the best and the brightest.
That has to be an answer. I was surprised, and I know that you've already said you're going to appeal this, but I was surprised the judge thinks that it is right and fair to take some 2,000 applicants to the FDNY that were in the flawed test that as the judge has determined, and actually pay them as if they had been hired.
Well, he argues that they were discriminated against, weren't hired, they suffer, and of course everybody thinks it doesn't cost anything, it's just the public's money. I can tell you we have less cops, less firefighters, less teachers, less social services, less everything when we have to pay tort settlements, whether it's for, you know, I'll show you how unfair the system is. If we, under the law, you have an automobile accident, you sue. The automobile accident is caused because there's a truck that backed out in the street and it rear ended into it, let's say. And the jury decides that it's 1% the fault of the city. Why? Because we didn't have brighter streetlights. But it's 99% responsible of the truck. The truck company doesn't have any money. New York City pays virtually all of the settlement. It's the public's money, and oh, you know, not going to hurt anything. Albany has that attitude. You know, the governor's fighting a good battle with this pension stuff. He's got to stick to his guns, and
the legislators aren't.
Suffolk County. Where are the people in Suffolk County? They should be calling their legislators and say, "Let me tell you something. We are laying off cops. Nassau lays off a whole bunch of cops. Newark laid off. All of these cities and counties are laying off employees. We haven't gotten to that yet because we have a stronger economy, and our economy is performing very well. If you see the economic numbers out today,
larger economy too.
Right, but that's the place that's really getting hurt are outside of New York City. And yet the legislature keeps going on and does this. And Shelley says, well, you've got to negotiate something with the unions. The unions were given the pension benefits by the state legislature, not totally, but almost all, without the city's involvement. And now the Shelley says, oh, take them away, the city's got to be involved. Why would a union leader ever negotiate with the city when they know that the state legislature is going to give it to them or protect them anyways? And that's what the governor's got to fight, and he's, you know, deserves a lot of credit, and we should stand with him.
The restaurant grading system is the city council had a hearing this week on it, and it's come under some scrutiny. And your reaction to those that say that it's subjective, it's cavalier.
If you want to have the restaurants be dirtier, have more mice and cockroaches and all that sort of stuff, lower the fines. There's a handful, something like 72, I think it is, 72% of the restaurants have A's. So it isn't hard to get. And the standard, even if it's hard to get, of saying you should have a clean kitchen and sell healthy food, it's not something that should be negotiated. I mean, that's just, you'd say, how can anybody vote against that? And the answer is that some of the restaurateurs who don't want to spend the money to clean up, they want to be able to not wash their hands after they go to the bathroom and not refrigerate their food and not keep the cockroaches and rats and mice out. Those are the ones that are in there yelling and screaming. But those who comply don't seem to have a problem. The restaurant business is up 9% in the last 9 months, biggest jump we've ever seen. And it certainly says people aren't scared off by this stuff. The polls show 91% of the public loves it. And so you wonder,
how could you not, as you say?
That's going to be a battle, and that's going to be a political thing here. And, the 91% aren't organized, but I think they're going to get organized. And, people keep telling me, I pick a restaurant. I certainly wouldn't go to a C restaurant, and I generally don't go to a B restaurant. And there's one place where I get coffee, and I saw they just went from an A to a B, and I meant to talk to the guy and see what his problem was. But, I can't get involved. And the health department, The Post had an editorial today. It's a scandal-ridden department. You go back to the 1980s. You know how many years ago was that? 30 years ago, 25 years ago. Come on, let's get serious here. The only reason to lower fines is to lower the quality. You lower the fines, there's less reason to comply. And then people say, well, you're doing this to raise money. No, we'll take the money. We don't take the money here. We're going to take the money in taxes. We're going to take the money someplace. And you're giving out too many tickets, whether it's parking tickets or this kind of summonses or whatever you call the health violations thing. The money just gets added in, and it means fewer, lower taxes. We still have going to spend the same amount of money. But when you take the fines away, it is only because people want to serve lower quality food that's less healthy. And the salmonella numbers, because it's one number we have we can measure, and it's a foodborne illness. If that goes down, all foodborne illnesses probably have went down with it. Down 14% in New York City and unchanged in the area all around New York City. So if it was something in the way wholesalers deliver food, they deliver it to the region. If it was something the way the diet is different in this part of the country than elsewhere, it's all in the region. In the five boroughs, salmonella poisoning down, every place else unchanged. And, you know, it just shows the power of a small group that wants to throw their money around in political races. And
I've equated this discussion to that of those that want, and this is not in New York, but there was in another state, to eliminate red light cameras because too many people were getting summonses.
Right.
Don't go through the red light. I mean, keep your restaurant clean and you don't have a problem.
I've always thought that fines are fairer, if you will, than taxes. You don't have any choice. You got to pay your taxes unless you don't make any money. But fines, just don't do what we're trying to prevent. You know, this is very simple, and you couldn't have said it better.
Yeah, exactly so. Tell you what we do. We're going to get to some telephones. I got some more questions as well. Before I actually go to a break here, we were talking about energy early. We started off there. There's a story that the city is trying to get turn garbage into energy.
Yeah,
which is a good idea.
We put out a proposal. Let's see what comes back.
Okay, incinerators though have been tried before. Now that was just getting
rid of
disposal.
This is not an incineration. Although at some point I think they'll come back to looking at it. It's very controversial. Incinerators. It has a connotation.
Well, again, it has spews.
Today the truth of the matter is the technology really doesn't, and there's lots of places that use incinerators. But I think the politics of incineration here is something, you know, maybe if I had to go back 10 years ago, we should have started out 10 years, maybe you would have gotten something done. But the cost of shipping our garbage out is enormous. And, you know, people say, oh, it's just money or it's just their money.
Somebody else's money, right?
You have no idea how many more teachers and firefighters and cops you could have. We always pick on those, but it could be everybody. Or how much more they could get paid, or how much lower taxes could be if we could, for example, dramatically reduce the cost of disposing of our waste. And so what we're trying to do is find new ways. This is another one of the ways. There's lots of technologies to turn certain kinds of waste into energy. And if somebody comes up with a great proposal, we're going to see if we can implement.
Speaking of dollars and cents, are you familiar with this little squib that was in the paper here this morning about the ambulance service, EMS?
No.
And the fact that $120 million worth of ambulance service never gets paid for by people who allege they can't,
okay,
they can't pay.
Now, wait. You call 911. Let me get this straight. You say, I'm having a heart attack.
No,
we send an ambulance. Wait a second, John. We want to check your credit. And I want to make sure, I want a certified check, or we want the credit card company to clear the charge before. I don't think
no,
so.
No, of course not. I understand that. I was just amazed at the amount of money
but
it's 33%. It's a third of the entire cost of the ambulance.
A lot of people, when, you know, they don't pay their bills. You know, that's go to Greece. Nobody pays their taxes.
No, I don't want to go to Greece. I'm going to stay right here. Thank you very much.
We do a pretty good job in comparison to that. But yes, there are people.
Yes, you do. All right. Hang tight, Mr. Mayor. We'll get right back. Let's see here. Do we have any open phones? One line left. 800 numbers or unemployment numbers.
Well, the U.S. just came out with, I think, probably bigger than estimated, 277,000 new jobs created. Unemployment rate stays at 8.3%. The unemployment rate always goes up when jobs go up because people say, oh, there are jobs available. I will now, if asked, say I'm looking for a job, and that's what the unemployment rate measures. The way the unemployment rate is measured is they do a telephone survey. And if you think that's hopeless, just say, no, I'm not looking for a job, then therefore you're not counted. If you say, yes, I'm looking for a job, you are counted. Whereas the number of jobs, that comes from Social Security numbers and other kinds of things. So those are much more real numbers. The good news, and we don't know what's going to happen in New York, because they come out 3 weeks after the federal numbers. But the revised numbers for the past is actually quite impressive. Up to January, this January, the New York City's economy recovered 146% of all the jobs, private sector jobs, lost 144 of all the jobs lost in the city in the recession, and 163% of all the private sector jobs. To put that in comparison, the U.S. only recovered 25% up through January and 33% of all jobs. So we're doing, we went into the recession later. It wasn't as deep. We've come out. All the stuff of, you know, they used to laugh about our five-borough economic diversification plan. Dr. Ruff used to go on about it. That is really one of the things that has saved us, because we have fashion. We have movies and television. We have biotech. We have IT growing here. We have tourism. We have a lot of things to counteract the other parts of the economy that go through a recession, like the financial industry, which is the one that really has gotten hurt. So the numbers are good. It's still, there's plenty of unemployment here. We've got to keep working. We've got to make sure we create jobs, not just jobs, but that will create real value add in the future, but also jobs for people who are currently looking for jobs. And some of those people don't have the skill sets that the jobs that are being created require. So you have this big mismatch. But, you know, on balance, the city's doing pretty well. The tourism really has been a godsend to those entering the workforce. And what you got to be careful of is the jobs that don't pay very much tend to be the entry-level jobs, particularly for young people, where they really learn how to work collaboratively and collectively. And if you raise the minimum wage, which I think a modest raise will be, it will not hurt and would be appropriate. If you go to some of these prevailing and living wage bills, you're just going to destroy jobs. And, you know, young people, maybe they're back on the streets, but they don't have a vote. They don't give money to campaigns. They don't go and give interviews to the press. And so it's easy to say, the heck with them.
Right.
What do I care? I want to.
Important question on the telephone line here. Grab your, grab your earphone there. Harry, good morning. You've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg's ear. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Gambling and Mayor. Mayor, you have recognized the importance of sports teams and sporting events to the economy of the city of New York. I wonder if, like you did with Brett Favre and planting a tree, if you will do something to encourage Peyton Manning to come to the Jets, maybe even work to put a windmill on top of the George Washington Bridge to rally against the era of alternative energy and promoting sports in the economy of the region.
Harry, I'll tell you a quick story. The only time anybody ever yelled at me on the subway, this is maybe 7 years ago, I'm getting off, and there's this big hulking guy on the other side of the subway car leaning against the door, glaring out at me, and before the doors closed, he glared at me and he screamed, "Fix the Knicks." Now, you know, unfortunately, the Dolans haven't called me and asked me to play. They got Jeremy Lin, but, you know, they didn't give me the chance, and, you know, who knows what would have happened. All kidding aside, look, we have a Manning in playing for the Giants. I think it'd be a great story for the press, Manning versus Manning, both playing in New York. But keep in mind, the Jets have a young quarterback in Mark Sanchez, and he nearly led his team to the Super Bowl twice. So, you know, let's not dismiss. I mean, he's sitting there. Everybody's talking about Manning and Mark Sanchez.
Life is tough when you're a professional quarterback.
As somebody said, welcome to the NFL.
Right.
But I actually met the Mannings, the three brothers, I think there are, and the father. On a golf course many years ago, and I was very impressed that I shook their hands. I think the boys were all still college quarterbacks.
They are the best of the best. Harry, good telephone call. Let's see here. Number six is Tom. Hello, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning, John. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Mayor, down in Freehold, New Jersey, there's a massive naval base. They have a little unit in it called the Damage Control Unit. They train anti-terrorists tactics to police, fire, and other assorted military units.
This is a federal program?
Yes. It's part of the Navy. Of the Navy. What's happening is that they're looking to move. They're thinking about Virginia. What I was wondering is, do you think this would be a good fit for the old Brooklyn Navy Yard? Is there facilities there? Their buildings?
Well,
there?
I don't know if we have what they need. And keep in mind, the Brooklyn Navy Yard is now a hubbub of commerce. There's still a shipyard there.
Fashion and other things,
right? Movies, big studios, Steiner Studios there. It is, and great place for an educational institution. We're still trying to work with other institutions around to see if anybody would come and put it. That was one of the sites that we thought would be very attractive. effective. Cornell preferred Roosevelt Island, but the Navy Yard would have been great as well. So I don't know if we have what they need. There are other places here. There is Floyd Bennett with a police department trained, but I just don't know what that unit needs. I'll see if we can't find out and remind the Navy.
Floyd Bennett's a great idea because it's an enormous facility.
And the Navy has a connection with New York City. The number of battleships and aircraft carriers made in New York City. Wasn't the aircraft carrier on the west side?
The Intrepid.
I think
it might have been,
I'm not sure. But certainly the Missouri was made, and there's a whole bunch. So the Navy knows New York City and the Navy Yard, and I'll remind them.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we'll see you next Friday. Thank you very much for your time this morning. Have yourself a very good week, and we continue. And when we do, David Gregory will join us, and John.